Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, November 5th, 2021. Today, as we do every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me with his reporting and analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So, Andrew, on Tuesday this week, what many in the publishing industry anticipated or dreaded or wished for, depending on the perspective, happened. The U.S. Department of Justice filed an antitrust lawsuit to block Penguin Random House parent company Bertelsmann's acquisition of Simon & Schuster. Many industry observers claimed they were surprised by the news. Did it surprise you?
Was I surprised? No, I was shocked. Plain and simple, I was. And honestly, I remain absolutely gobsmacked by the DOJ's action here. And I would add there are probably more than a few surprises still to come as the DOJ complaint winds its way through the system. And the complaint suggests to me that, you know, after years of these exact same issues with consolidation persisting in the book business, that, you know, maybe the government is actually going to start paying attention to this stuff. In fact, I'll point to the recent Authors Guild reaction statement to the news, which reads like the decision totally surprised them as well. And the Authors Guild was, of course, one of the most staunch opponents of this deal. So was I surprised? I was shocked. And I have a feeling, as I said, the filing of the suit is not the last twist.
All right. So why has the DOJ chosen to thwart the deal, Andrew? Give us a quick primer on what's happened here.
Sure. And I think this is actually a source of my surprise, in fact, because, you know, while such deals are often opposed because of monopoly concerns, this one is actually based on monopsony concerns, more specifically on the basis that this deal will harm the advances paid to authors. And even more specifically, that it's going to harm advances paid to a small subset of best-selling commercial authors. Now, those who aren't familiar with the term monopsony, basically, it's the other side of the monopoly coin, right? Where a monopoly deals with a concentration of sellers in any given industry, monopsony deals with a concentration of buyers. And in this case, the buyers are the publishers who pay advances to authors. And basically, a combined Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster with little competition would, in theory, pay less to authors. In other words, because the deal would result in fewer major publishers potentially be there to bid up advances, the DOJ has decided to step in. And I'll quote from the DOJ press release. They write, simply put, if Penguin Random House acquires Simon & Schuster, the two publishers will stop competing against each other, and as a result, authors will be paid less for their work. Authors who are paid less write less, which in turn means that the quantity and variety of books diminishes too, and that, the DOJ says, ultimately harms consumers. But again, the press release really caught my attention because the U.S. Attorney General noted that if the world's largest book publisher is permitted to acquire one of its biggest rivals, it will have unprecedented control over the book industry. And acting Assistant Attorney General Richard Powers, who heads up the Justice Department's Antitrust Division on an acting basis, added that this lawsuit will, quote, prevent further consolidation in an industry that has a history of collusion. But will it, though? You know, we can talk about those statements and what they might mean in a bit, but I found the press release to be at once a little too late and both way over the top.
And last month, Andrew, you told me that Penguin Random House global CEO Marcus Doley pledged PRH and SNS editors would continue to bid against one another. You expressed some skepticism about that statement at the time, and it turns out DOJ agrees with you.
Yeah, you know, I wish I had seen in those remarks from Doley what it really is now. In retrospect, it was clearly a sign that Penguin Random House officials were kind of feeling the heat. I mean, in hindsight, those remarks loomed to me as a signal that PRH officials had a sense that this opposition from the DOJ was coming, right? And yeah, as you know, in its complaint, the DOJ specifically called out this overture from Marcus Doley. And again, I'll read from the complaint here. In short, after securing nearly half the market for publishing rights to anticipated top-selling books, Penguin Random House asked this court to trust that Penguin Random House will not use its market power to maximize profits for the benefit of its shareholders, but rather it will essentially compete with itself to reduce those profits. This proposal defies economic sense, can be evaded or violated without detection, and is unenforceable.
That's
not mixing words there. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, not one bit can be evaded or violated without detection. That is strong stuff. And PRH and SNS officials, though, intend to fight the decision.
Yeah, so both publishers defended the deal in statements to the media, and actually, you know, and sources close to both publishers accused the government of actually cherry-picking the numbers that it used to oppose the deal. And we should note that Penguin Random House has hired a real heavy hitter, Daniel Petrocelli, who's the vice chair of O'Melveny & Myers, as their lead trial attorney. And Petrocelli said in a statement that he was pretty confident that the court would see things differently. And that's the thing. If this is not settled, if they don't find a way to revise this deal and sort of like get it approved, and it does end up going to trial, Petrocelli has some experience here, right? Recently, he defeated the DOJ's bid to block the massive $85 billion Time Warner AT&T deal. Now, I don't think there's much we can really read into that Time Warner AT&T experience because, you know, these cases are, all of these antitrust cases are, as Petrocelli himself has said, at least he said it at the time he won the Time Warner case, they're specific, right? They're specific to the facts of each case. And it's pretty clear that the case against the Time Warner AT&T deal was probably not very strong, right? You remember it was brought by a DOJ that was, shall we say, questionable in its leadership at the time. And there was a lot of talk that President Trump had actually insisted on the case being brought as a way to sort of stick it to CNN's parent company. But again, who knows? So what we do know is that the case failed. As for this case, while I think the complaint that the DOJ filed hits a lot of high notes, it also strikes me as somewhat vulnerable too. And I base this on my conversations with, you know, my antitrust go-to here, Chris Sagers, who's the Cleveland Marshall College law professor and author of the 2019 book, United States versus Apple, Competition in America. And I'll take you back to November of 2020 when this deal was first announced. And Professor Sagers told me that there was maybe a 50-50 chance that the deal would be challenged or conditioned by regulators. And we talked about this at the time on the show. And he explained that as a practical matter, regulatory agencies during the last few decades have rarely brought serious challenges to deals in markets that are less concentrating than 4-3. That is, as long as a deal leaves at least four major firms in a market, regulators in recent decades have been unlikely to sue. At the same time, Sagers also told me that size does matter. And even though the Penguin Random House Simon & Schuster deal would have left four major publishers at the top of the publishing business, Sagers warned then that the metrics used to calculate market concentration, it's known as the HHI, which stands for the Herfindahl-Hirsch Index, that could weigh against approval. Because the combination of Penguin Random House, which was already the world's biggest English language trade publisher, and Simon & Schuster essentially would create one firm that would be significantly larger than its next closest rival. You know, we've talked about this before on the show, and I've called this the creation of the big one. And then, you know, the medium three, we'll have to work on that. I don't know what the medium three would really be. But in its complaint, the DOJ references these metrics, basically at one point saying that there is this framework to evaluate these deals. They cite the AHI, and they note that this deal, you know, well, it rung the bell.
All right, then. So in your assessment, what are the chances PRH and SNS can succeed in court against DOJ?
Well, these battles are always tough, right? And oftentimes the players in antitrust cases like this decide it's not worth it, and they just back away, or they, you know, sometimes they go back and they come back with a new structure, or they agree to conditions and spin off companies. But the way I see this case is in its complaint, the DOJ tells a pretty good story about why it's stepping up to block this deal. But I wonder if that means it has a good case. Now, I think this complaint really very nicely reflects the disdain that's out there for this deal. I think those in the industry really don't want to see this deal happen. But I'm not entirely convinced that a good lawyer like Daniel Petrocelli can't shoot holes in this complaint and reframe it in such a way that a federal judge, especially if they draw one with a more conservative view of antitrust and a less political agenda, and I apologize, I didn't see what judge is going to draw this case yet, but you know, maybe they can find a judge that can get behind them. And on that score, we know that there are definitely market definition issues that are going to come up here. For example, we talk about advances being harmed, but what advances are the DOJ counting? You know, what other data is out there? When people close to PRH and said the DOJ was cherry-picking numbers to make its case, well, can PRH sway a court to look differently at the data, both financial and anecdotal, because there's a lot of anecdotal evidence in the complaint, or can they get a judge to consider different data altogether? And I do think the DOJ complaint raises some questions that Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster can play in court. For example, the complaint sites, all of these examples of Simon & Schuster getting outbid and losing books to PRH, and they paint a very grim picture of what would happen to competition. At the same time, clearly Simon & Schuster and a lot of other major publishers won a lot of books too, because Simon & Schuster and all the other majors have been quite well represented on the bestseller list in recent years, and they've all posted pretty strong growth in 2020 and 2021. So do I think there's a chance that PRH and Simon & Schuster can prevail here? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. But something else that we have to consider here too, and that's that this deal is broadly unpopular in the industry. And obviously, given that this case was filed, it's a legitimate cause for concern. Now, on one hand, Penguin Random House doesn't have to change any minds in the industry. They have to just change the mind of a judge in an area of law that frankly has been pretty reluctant to step up for many decades. But if Penguin Random House does decide to fight this deal in court, I think it sends a bit of a message to authors and to the rest of the industry that, you know, PRH, for all they want to frame this as good for the industry, fighting the suit in court, I think, only reinforces the opinion among their competitors and peers in the industry that this is less of a strategic acquisition than a hostile takeover of the book business, whether that's fair or not.
Well, all right. So no doubt we will talk more, much more about this suit as it unfolds, Andrew. Let's close, though, with a couple of your personal takeaways.
We're going to have to book another block of time here. I'm really just sort of getting into this. But I think the most obvious point that many people have been raising is, what does this mean for Amazon, right? And by that, I mean, if the publishing business is going to get this kind of antitrust scrutiny, is Amazon going to get it as well? And I'll be honest, I just don't know how to view that question just yet. I do think Amazon has many challenges coming its way. I think the headlines in recent months tell us that. But I'm still sorting out what this action says about what might be in store for Amazon. And obviously, Amazon clearly has an outsized influence in the book business, right? And on authors. And if the DOJ is suddenly now paying attention to these things, well, let's go, right? Then again, if the DOJ manages to take this case on against Penguin Random House and loses, is that going to slow their role in taking on Amazon, which of course is a much, much bigger fish? And another thing that struck me too, and back when I said the DOJ's statements were both too little too late and way over the top earlier in the podcast, you know, here's what I meant. If this deal is blocked, what happens with Simon & Schuster? Where does it go? Because it's pretty clear that CBS still wants to unload it. Now, I said too little too late because consolidation has been pretty much unchecked in this industry, and people have been calling out its negative effects for some time now. So is this where we're drawing the line? Is this the bridge that's too far? You know, with this suit, is the DOJ really saying that consolidation and publishing stops right here with the big five? Because basically, that's kind of what their statement says. Or can we, you know, reasonably expect another smaller big five publisher to step in now and pick off Simon & Schuster? Now, listeners might recall that last year when this deal was announced, I had a bit of a laugh over News Corp CEO Robert Thompson's statement that, you know, PRH's bid would find antitrust problems. You know, News Corp, of course, was said to be the underbidder for Simon & Schuster, the parent company of HarperCollins. And at the time, Thompson said that there was no market logic to a bid of this size, only anti-market logic. And what made me laugh was that because he said it as if his bid, if News Corp's bid, was not of concern for antitrust regulators. Well, let me first say that Thompson was right about his antitrust concerns, because that has clearly come to pass. But I also stand by my position in that statement, because ask yourself this. Is the DOJ going to now approve a sale of Simon & Schuster to News Corp if that was to be on the table again? Because that would still give us a big four too, right? The difference being, rather than having one really big publisher at the top, we'd have two. And I asked my antitrust guy, Chris Sagers, what he thought about that deal. And he thinks that, yeah, that News Corp probably would be approved to buy Simon & Schuster because it would probably slip in under that HHI threshold, you know, the metrics that look at market concentration. But again, I think it's fair to say that the effects of the News Corp Simon & Schuster deal on author advances would largely be the same as a Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster deal. It would reduce competition. Now, maybe not as much as having a behemoth like, you know, Penguin Random House and Simon & Schuster at the top. But hey, we have the government on record now that are basically saying their position is to, quote, prevent further consolidation. That's what they said. That's what was in the press release. So I ask, is this it? Is the big five where we're going to draw the line now? Or do we allow one more firm to get up to Penguin Random House's size and then say that's it? Well, how is that fair to the remaining publishers, right? Who will, you know, lose books to these two publishers instead of losing books to this one publisher. So it will be fascinating to see if this deal with Penguin Random House is killed, what happens next with Simon & Schuster, and whether News Corp tries to swoop in where the DOJ comes down, or whether another Big Five publisher tries to get into the game. And it also struck me that according to the complaint, is this battle really going to be fought on behalf of a very small subset of the highest paid, top-selling authors? You know, you have Merrick Garland in the press release talking about how important books are and how books have shaped American public life throughout our nation's history and how authors are the lifeblood of book publishing in America. So we're going to save the industry now by assuring that the Kardashians can still get huge advances? You know, I'm being glib here, but my point is that the vast majority of authors who Garland is referring to are not going to see higher advances if this deal is spiked. I mean, the damage is done here in terms of consolidation and fighting to ensure that hundreds of authors, to quote the DOJ, and celebrities get high advances for their memoirs isn't exactly the kind of rallying cry, you know, against the pernicious effects of consolidation that I think many of us would like to see. Now, I'm not saying that's a reason to approve this deal. I'm just pointing out that there's a horse barn door thing that comes to mind in terms of consolidation. And I think, as the Authors Guild says in its statement, killing this deal doesn't necessarily fix any of that. But if this suit is a sign that the government is paying attention, well, let's saddle up and ride. And on a broader note, final thing comes to mind. We've had a lot of good news to talk about on this podcast in terms of publishing sales over the last year, even against the tragic backdrop of the pandemic. It has been pretty much a feel-good story to note how well the book business has done. But I'm looking now at how 2022 is setting up. You know, we have supply chain challenges that we talked about recently. And last week we talked about sales potentially coming back to earth in 2022. And now suddenly we have these legal challenges that don't exactly reflect well on the big publishers, right? You have this deal, the Penguin Random House Simon & Schuster deal being opposed. You have a civil suit that alleges a price-fixing conspiracy with the major publishers and Amazon, which if it's not dismissed, and the publishers are hoping that it will be, it could get pretty messy. And you have a group of major publishers who are suing the Internet Archive over its scanning and lending program, which has been drawing more and more editorials and attention in the press. So I'm just saying that's a lot of lawyering and a lot of lawyer bills, but more, it's a lot of tricky public relations to handle too. And at a time when books and publishers have been riding a wave of good sales and good feelings as people have rediscovered or reengaged with their love of books and reading. I really don't think industry leaders want to be in the headlines in 2022 for all the reasons mentioned above. So I'll be curious to see whether industry leaders reassess or maybe moderate some of their positions and start looking for some ways to potentially turn down the heat in 2022 and take the focus and put it back on books and titles and out of the courtroom. Or, you know, we have these every once in a while, but will 2022 be another year of the lawyer in the book business? Certainly more to come.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, a survey by the Tufts Center for the Study of Drug Development assessed attitudes, experiences, and effectiveness of remote teams managing and supporting global clinical research activity during the COVID-19 pandemic. Maria Flores, who served on the research team, tells me what lockdown meant for researchers who were also caregivers.
Having children and having caregiving responsibilities definitely affected the level of burnout in our respondents. We see that women and those in caregiving responsibilities had a higher proportion of respondents saying they felt burnout, for example, which isn't so surprising, but seeing it in the data is really interesting.
Well, indeed, that sense of exhaustion that you found wouldn't be surprising at all. And yet, 86% of the professionals surveyed say they wish to continue working remotely. So there must be something satisfying about this professionally and personally. So let's talk about that. What did you discover about productivity and people's perception of their productivity?
So 43% of those in our sample said that their productivity hadn't changed since their company started using remote approaches to their work since the pandemic began. And that's a quite high proportion of respondents being satisfied with their levels of productivity.
Reckoning with remote research. coming on the next CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.